On campus, remote learning, a phased-in approach. Colleges and universities across the country are putting their plans into action as the fall semester draws near or is underway. We're talking about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. All those hours-long administrator Zoom meetings for developing plans and backup plans and flowcharts to navigate COVID on campus, it's all about to roll out or in the early stages as classes begin. How do you think colleges should deliver instruction? Do you live in a college town? Are you concerned about the virus spreading as students settle in for the school year? We're at 800-642-1234. Chris Quintana is an education enterprise reporter for USA Today. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me today.
So as you write, it's not if or when, it's just how bad these outbreaks will be. Why are colleges and universities willing to reopen under these circumstances?
You know, there's a lot of reasons at play here. You know, for a lot of universities, there's the holistic mission to think about, and they believe that in-person instruction really is the way to facilitate that kind of learning. But, you know, these are big, complex organizations at the end of the day, and if you don't have students on campus, that could mean a reduction in tuition dollars, which could ultimately mean that people lose their jobs, which is, you know, hard for future students as well.
What financial challenges are you seeing in higher education right now? How bad are these challenges?
So, you know, it's kind of like twofold, right? So in the spring, there was a pretty significant disruption in having to send students home during the middle of the semester. So you're not only dealing kind of with the fallout of not having them on campus for the rest of the semester, but then you also have to kind of deal with the fact that you have to issue refunds from things like housing, dining plans to, you know, even very small things like parking passes in some cases. So colleges are kind of already dealing with that. And on top of that, you know, some students are reconsidering about, you know, their plans for the fall semester. You know, they may be choosing a cheaper option rather than like the Reach College that they had in mind. So that starts definitely hurting some folks as well, you know. The American Council on Education is predicting with billions in losses, and they're talking about, you know, wanting somewhere in the neighborhood of, sorry, I'm trying to find the right figure here, you know, spending somewhere near $74 billion for, or having spent $74 billion last time around. So that's, I mean, these are pretty significant losses.
Well, I want to fast forward now to universities just opening. And this morning, the New York Times is linking at least 251 cases of the virus to fraternities and sororities around the country. What do colleges do about frat parties? And I say this because in recent years, UW-Madison was the nation's number one party school.
Yeah, so that's a tricky situation. You know, in some cases, the fraternity houses or you know, Greek life more broadly are housed on campus, so the university could have the ability to you know, revoke its recognition of those spaces, or you know, essentially suspend the chapter, which would go you know, potentially a long way in tamping down that behavior. But you know, these organizations often have like satellite houses that are off campus, where you kind of you know have the more wild or you know, parties that might attract too much attention were they held on campus. And so that's been a driver kind of across, you know, nationally for colleges. What do you do about parties in the off-campus spaces without, you know, just policing your student body the entire time? And I think people are having a hard time trying to figure out where that line is.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chris Quintana, who covers higher ed news for USA Today. We're talking about how colleges and universities are approaching this academic year amid the pandemic, taking your questions, your insights, what you're seeing out there. What are your thoughts on students returning to campus? Do you think universities should offer in-person or virtual classes? How do you think colleges should deliver instruction? We're at 800-642-1234. Chris, how are you seeing different universities take steps to help prevent the spread and prevent outbreaks?
So I would say perhaps the best place to start with that is kind of the testing approach, right? And we're already seeing a lot of variety in that. And I guess, well, it's helpful to look at the two of the major universities that have already reopened, you know, Notre Dame and University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Both, you know, we're had testing plans. Notre Dame, you know, sent out somewhere in the neighborhood of 12,000 tests before, you know, students even came to campus, and they reported a positivity rate of less than 1%. But once students were back on campus, that's when cases kind of shot back up. So I think that you see a little bit of variety there in between, you know, how aggressively campuses are testing. You know, there is the kind of pre-arrival to campus. There is the, you know, we're going to try to test, you know, a random cohort of students every week or twice a week, or, you know, something to that effect. And other universities are, you know, have less aggressive plans. They're relying on students to, you know, self-report their symptoms or, you know, find testing in other places. So it's really hard to say that there's any, you know, one uniform way that the colleges are approaching this, because it's kind of everyone is treading this water individually in some cases.
So is Notre Dame then back to virtual learning? Where does it stand?
Yeah, so they have paused in-person classes for the next 2 weeks or so. As I read it, students who are on campus are not to leave campus unless there's an emergency, and students off campus, you know, were encouraged not to come to campus. And that was about after a week of classes, and that was the same at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You know, about a week in, they had to pivot as, you know, they started to see clusters popping up or in student living spaces. And you know, again, both of them cited these off-campus gatherings. And this is something that administrators and health experts have told me repeatedly. You know, it's like, we can do a really good job of controlling the space within the classroom and with on campus. And you know, we can make sure students are wearing their masks and socially distance and that sort of thing. But it's really anyone's guess as to what happens in the spaces where they're, you know, their eyes don't reach.
Yeah, you can't police it 24/7. And I want to look at what students are saying. I saw that Georgia Tech students staged a die-in on the first day of classes. The governor, they're pushing in-person instruction, and the state is seeing a very high rate of new cases. So what are students saying about how classroom instruction should be delivered?
You know, I think there's two parties there. You know, I think there's a group of students who are, frankly, pretty beleaguered by the continued online instruction. I think we all kind of have a sense of, after a lot of Zoom calls or you know, digital interaction with folks, that it can wear on people after
Zoom
a while.
Zoom fatigue,
you know,
is a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then I think, you know, it also, you know, I was talking to Notre Dame, and they, you know, they made a good point that, you know, the pivot to digital instruction was not smooth for all students. You know, there are certainly students who don't have internet resources at home, or, you know, for, you know, they're living with a larger family, or they just don't have that space to really study in the same way that they would on campus. So I think you see among those students like a real effort to try to get back to campus, because they feel like that's how they're going to learn best. But on the other hand, you have a lot of students who feel that, you know, coming back to campus is putting their health at risk. And then they're, you know, as you mentioned, they're staging protests in Georgia, in North Carolina, they've staged protests. And, you know, there's also a growing number of graduate students and kind of students at that level who are pushing back against their university's plans to have them teach in person. You know, I'm thinking at Texas A&M University. So I think we'll see more of that as we get deeper into the fall semester.
Chris Quintana is an Enterprise education reporter at USA Today. He's briefing us on how campuses are rolling out fall coursework in the pandemic. Students, have you moved back on campus? Do you wear a mask when you go out? What about your friends and neighbors? When was the last time you were in a group? Faculty, how are you delivering content? Will you be teaching in person or in front of a camera? Still time for your perspective, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Chris Quintana here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about colleges reopening for fall amid the pandemic here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Campus leaders have had the summer months to prep. What changes have occurred since spring, when campuses abruptly went dark in the quarantine weeks? We have Chris Quintana, who covers higher ed at USA Today. He's been writing about how it's not if or when an outbreak will happen on campus, but how bad outbreaks could be and whether having in-person experience for students is worth the cost. What do you think? Are you a student, faculty, or campus employee? How do you feel about fall? Join in 800-642-1234. And Chris Quintana stays with us for 10 more minutes. Chris, I want to ask you about symptom checker apps and the rollout of these symptom checking apps. How are they working? How are universities using these apps?
Yeah, that's not a space that I've delved into as deeply, but it does rely on students to be kind of, you know, participating in the process. And I think there's already like a large focus on kind of shifting the onus of responsibility for preventing outbreaks to students. You know, there's the symptoms trackers. There is this idea that, you know, there's this message that's coming from college administrators that, like, you have to be responsible. You can't party. You can't, go off campus and kind of risk the health of yourself and your peers and the community. And so, you know, I think that's, I think some students are finding that frustrating to find that onus on them kind of all the time, especially since it's ultimately the university who makes the call to, you know, have classes in person or online in a lot of cases.
I wonder if larger universities are going to be able to have the testing capacity. It's not just getting the students in the door for that testing, but it's also getting those tests back quickly and having the, I would think it's a volume issue as well.
Yeah, and you know, it also depends on kind of like, you know, how aggressive the university thinks testing needs to be, right? So we've talked about kind of, you know, some universities have done this a big rollout where they do a lot of testing beforehand, and then, you know, they don't, it's unclear kind of like how much testing kind of occurs after that. You know, in some cases, it's based on if students are reporting symptoms or if they've had contact with, you know, someone who has been reported to be symptomatic or asymptomatic. As far as capacity goes, you know, that also depends on the type of test that's being done and the resources available to the university. You know, I'm thinking about the University of Illinois recently rolled out a new saliva test. They say that will be that'll help them to do thousands of tests in a day. And, you know, not every university has access to that kind of technology. So I think there's definitely a challenge as those, you know, as technology and resources kind of like as those limits reach one another, I think it's a challenge for some campuses, certainly.
So I think the crux of it is here. If you have the aggressive testing, you have virus safety apps rolled out, you've got mandatory mask wearing, you've got limited classroom numbers. Does all of that make it safe enough for on-campus learning?
You know, that's a good question, and I think we're going to see that question kind of come up more as we get deeper into the semester, and we do see potentially more outbreaks on campus. For the few campuses that we've seen reopen now, you know, the University of Notre Dame and Chapel, you know, North Carolina Chapel Hill, you know, they definitely thought there was value in bringing people back to campus and that they had the resources in place to address any sort of, you know, issues that came up, you know, within the community. But, you know, within a week, it became clear that, you know, something else would need to be done. And so I think we'll continue to see a lot of universities reopen because it is very important kind of for the academic mission, for the survival of the institution. The question is, you know, kind of how long do they actually stay open? So that's something I'll be keeping an eye on.
We have Chris Quintana, who covers higher ed news for USA Today. We're talking about how colleges and universities are navigating fall coursework amid the pandemic, taking your insights on this as well from your perspective, 800-642-1234. Chris, in the universities you talked with about their outbreaks, how was contact tracing? How did that work? Were they able to figure out how the outbreak occurred? Were they able to zero in on it?
You know, based on the reports that have come out so far, I mean, they've been pretty specific in both cases have been able to, you know, at Chapel Hill and Notre Dame, in both cases, they've been able to trace that back to, you know, off-campus gatherings, which is pretty impressive. And, you know, goes to show that, you know, in most cases, the university appears to be doing a good job of controlling, spread on campus itself. So, you know, I think that's an encouraging sign. But, you know, the challenge is then, you know, it's helpful to have contact tracing, but if the compliance kind of isn't in place, or if there's this sort of what seems to be an inherent risk in gathering large groups of you know, young people back into one space after a summer being isolated, I don't know, you know, if that's certainly helpful, but there's questions about, you know, what is going, you know, is that enough?
Yeah, I mean, like, how do you crack down on the spread? What are the disciplinary consequences for bad public health behavior? How do you enforce?
Yeah, that's a really good question and something I've been trying to get an answer to. You know, Drake University recently announced that they were banning 14 people from campus for 2 weeks for violating the university's rules on parties. We've seen kind of similar measures at Syracuse University up there in New York. Other universities have kind of made a big, you know, they've made some noise about, you know, being like, you really need to follow this rule or suspension or expulsion or possible. I think there becomes a challenge there in that, you know, talking about contact tracing, you know, if there is a stigma, if there is a punishment associated with attending a party, you know, you're creating a weird incentive for students to, you know, do they tell the contact tracer that they were at the party and risk expulsion? Does the organizer of a party admit to, like, you know, hosting a party and you know, potentially losing out on their scholarship? It's a tricky line to walk, and I don't know what the answer is there, but I think those are some of the problems that universities have run into in kind of enforcing this these orders.
Well, let's take a call now. Lindsay is joining us from the Medical College of Wisconsin. Hi, Lindsay.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is your institution doing?
Well, the Medical College of Wisconsin I'm a staff member, and I feel has been on top of it since the outbreak really started to manifest here in Wisconsin in March. And you've got disparate audiences there with staff, faculty, obviously leadership, different kinds of learners. You have an early first year and second year medical students, third and fourth year.
Oh, Lindsay, you're breaking up here a bit. Can you still hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
Yes,
go ahead.
Better?
Yeah, that's better. Uh-huh.
Great. Well, the medical college is really paying attention to the different kinds of learners within the college, and basically, we have the medical students, the first and second year, that are first-time learners. What we're doing is they are staggered on campus. They are offered the option to attend lectures in campus. They're staggered with groups of perhaps 50, although the attendance has been around 25. Everything else is live-streamed, and it always has been. They're very up-to-date with the technology, obviously. But for the third and fourth year students who are beginning their clinical rotation, again, they are in a limited capacity. And if a student does have to miss some of the rotation because of COVID, the directors will obviously work with them to make it up in a similar simulated environment. And if it was too long, they would have to repeat the rotation. But to enter on campus, you have to log in and clear your symptoms online, if you have any, and it's connected with public safety and your badge. They could track at any time if someone was on campus and had not at least checked in, you know, in that capacity. And no visitors are allowed. Staff is limited when they need to be, leadership when they need to be.
And Lindsay, we're short on time here, but I want to get Chris here to respond here in just a moment. And Medical College of Wisconsin and trying to be more flexible with its med students.
I'm sorry, what am I?
Yeah,
I think we're Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. I mean, as we're short on time here, but I just, here is how a medical college is responding by trying to be much more flexible with its med students at the lower level and upper levels.
Yeah, so we are kind of seeing that across the board, you know, not just in the medical spaces, but you know, kind of at most universities, you know, where students are being given a lot of latitude as far as, you know, the online classes that they can take and kind of their ability to learn remotely versus in person. Even the universities that have committed to, you know, kind of like a full in-person opening, a lot of them are going to have, you know, a lot of digital classes. So I think, you know, it's just going to be a semester unlike we've seen before. And a lot of my experts have said remain uncertain or you know, uncertainty will be a running theme. So.
Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Chris Quintana is Education Enterprise reporter for USA Today. Coming up, we talk about how families may delay their annual back-to-school shopping rituals. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.